So I should say good morning still. Today we have sustainable products and services, eco-design. This is a topic which is quite interesting these days. Very many people discuss about eco-design. Eco-design is kind of a collective name for many ideas, many management, many engineering, many technological ideas on the market today. And I will try to show you a few things about eco-design. This is the overview of what we are going to discuss. It seems like quite a lot. We will look at definitions, then strategies, tools, and solutions, a couple of interesting solutions in eco-design, which you may find out there, at least some of them. Some of them we don't even notice. We discussed about eco-textiles before. We don't see many of those things now in the market, but there are other things which are there we just don't recognize. So if you look at definitions, we still have to definition strategies, tools, and solutions. But just going back to definitions, we have to think about sustainable products and services. Sustainable still means what we discussed before. We have to think about the environment, which is around here. We have to think about social issues and economic issues. So eco-design is not only mentioning environmental aspects. It has to take into account social aspects. For example, here we have diversity, human rights, labor relations, community outreach, many different issues, which are also part of eco-design. It's not only about protecting the environment. It's a much wider issue. You can also see that there are some overlaps in between socio-economic or socio-environmental issues. Eco-efficiency up there, resource efficiency is one big part of eco-design, what we are discussing. Product life cycle management, we will have a few words about life cycle assessment today. Socio-economic ideas about job creation, security, business ethics, which are important and getting more and more important. Now the question is, of course, what is design? This is not a design course. This is a general management or environmental management course. We have to think about design, and there are many understandings of design. There are more and more types of design coming up. So we can say user experience design. If you use a software, for example, or a cell phone, that can be designed. What is the experience of the user? That's what we call user experience design. We have emotion design. Would you think that people are there to design what feelings we have if we, say, watch a movie? I guess that's quite normal. But when we buy a product, or when we look at a product setting, or when we go around and walk around a mall, a shopping mall, people are thinking, you know, what colors and how we should feel about the colors and the building and the construction. Graphic design is more obvious, but what we are going to look at now is industrial design. So eco-design is more related to industrial design, not to say that it doesn't relate to the other issues. So that's one of the products which has been around in the market for 30, 40 years. An old phone which was designed to be very functional, but this functionality is not only not the one and only part of design. This is a good definition of design, industrial design, coming from the Eastern Industrial Design Society in America. And it says that this kind of a service, so this service as design doesn't have much impact on the environment, but the result of the design service has the environment and society and the environment. It talks about concepts and specifications that optimize function, value, and appearance. When we, in normal day, talk about design, we very much think about how things look like. This is a designer product, a designer fashion. It's very much how things look like. But of course, there is a function side of it, and we have to balance. So a good designer can balance function, value, and appearance. With that phone, it was more about the function. So maybe this is changing over time. So maybe we put more emphasis on how things look like, appearance. Okay? Also, it's interesting that this is not only the benefit of the manufacturer or the user. It should please everybody. So it should be good for the manufacturer so that it's easy to produce a product, for example, or has lower environmental impacts, but also for the user. It should be user-friendly. I think this is one of the key terms when you buy a product these days. It should be user-friendly. Even with software tools, with hardware tools, with cell phones, with cars, whatever product you buy, we are talking about user friendliness. Now, what does that mean, of course, because the users are different. So how can we define this? This is not an easy question. Now, why? What is this eco-design thing? So we know what is industrial design. Eco-design has a couple of names. It could be called green design. It could be sustainable design. Eco-design is maybe the most widespread term used. And it's about integrating environmental issues. But I would say that, as I mentioned, social issues should be integrated as well. At a design phase, considering the whole product life cycle from raw materials acquisition to disposal, final disposal. So again, we have this kind of life cycle approach. Now, it's interesting that this eco may refer to being ecological, but also economic. So it's also about the economy. It should be feasible to design the product, to produce the product. We see a lot of products in the design phase these days. The car industry is always showing us cars which are never going to be built, right? So they just show cars, this is what we are thinking about, and then in the end, it will turn out something quite different. So it's kind of a phase of the design process when they show us. This was not the usual practice before. Now, why should we deal with this? Why is it so important from an environmental point of view? They say that it's about 80% of all product-related environmental impacts which can be influenced here when we design something. Design, of course, means how we design the manufacturing process, not only the looks of the product, not only the size or the raw materials we use, but also the production process when you set up your plant, for example. And for the life cycle cost, the situation is very much similar. So the whole life cycle, if you look at the whole life cycle of the product, then the cost can be very much influenced at the design phase. So this seems to be more important than we used to consider. So these are all the definition issues. We have to remember what is design. Eco-design is very much closer to industrial design than the other types we mentioned. And the reason is that this is a very important influencing factor for the whole manufacturing product process, the whole product life cycle. Okay, looking at some strategies, what kind of strategies we have with designing, we can say that, just going back here, of course, everything goes wrong. But not now. So we have a couple of strategies we can have. Namely, here we have listed 8 strategies. Some of them are related more to the production process, some of them more to the use phase of the life cycle. This first one is talking about what kind of raw materials and energy sources we use. You can see, of course, what are the dangerous types of materials we could use. It could be explosive gases, flammable liquids, corrosive, radioactive, and all the different types of hazardous materials, which we try to avoid. This could be a strategy for eco-design or sustainable design. Also, just reducing the numbers of different types of pieces or raw materials makes our life much easier. So simplification of products is usually an environmental move from the company. If you have more pieces, then it's harder to disassemble in the end. Then you have to identify more different parts when you recycle. So just to make it simpler and more homogeneous, for example, can be a good way to go ahead. An example could be a paper manufacturing company which offers packaging services. The paper company would like to design their own boxes for products. On the other hand, some producers prefer to buy the box. The paper company likes to advertise that they know much better how to package. And they would use only paper components. They wouldn't use the plastic component, the plastic bag component of a, say, for example, packaging a video recorder or a CD player. Use different types of materials. The paper company could do it only with paper. Now, of course, that's their own interest, to sell more paper, so that's how they relate. Now, of course, it's not easy to know what kind of materials you use. In different countries, different materials can be deemed hazardous or not, depending, say, this says international, national, local industry guidelines. So what is hazardous? That's a good question. And this may be different in each country or each continent. Now, the next strategy in eco-design is the production phase. So if you see here, we have this paper company. How can we decrease emissions in the production phase? This is what we call cleaner production or pollution prevention and these kind of issues. This is what most of the companies would do anyway in eco-design. They don't even know that if they look at the production phase, they already started the first step on eco-design, on the way to an eco-design product. The distribution phase. This is actually a sketch, a drawing of a storage facility, which was built in a sustainable way. Of course, buildings are very much interesting for us in eco-design, how to design sustainable buildings, but also storage facilities. But also when we plan our transportation, for example, how much we transport our products. An eco-design product shouldn't be transported all around the world. Or is it still eco-design? Okay? So it would be very nice to use raw materials which are sourced locally, then assembled locally or regionally and sold in the same region or country. That should be part of eco-design. Imagine buying products from China and from the US still titled eco-design. Is it really good for the environment or not? So there is a lot of issues in transportation, in storage, say even in cooling or heating, and just from how many sources you buy all the raw materials. So we go back to this raw material issue again. The use of the products is also very much interesting. This is the next life cycle of the product. And these light bulbs represent what we all know about this, how much energy we use, how much emissions arise from the different types of products. Now, another idea behind this eco-design is the extension of the life cycle of the products. So if you think about recycling or reusing, this is something what we use to extend the life cycle. And we are not talking about selling the product for a longer period of time on the market, but what we are saying is that somehow we get the waste back and then reuse and remanufacture and recycle. Remanufacturing was an interesting practice, for example, for the Xerox Corporation. They collected all the old copy machines, for example, and then they would remanufacture, and you could buy the used copy machines, which had the new parts which were necessary to replace. You can also buy refurbished or second-hand stuff. This is also kind of extending the product life cycle. And also, this is something we used to do hundreds of years ago. Our grandparents used things for, you know, tens, dozens of years. If you think about a family watch, you know, I would get my father's watch and he would get the watch from his father and the grandfather and so on and so on. Now maybe we buy the same watch every season with different colors. Okay? So this is something we have to go back to the roots, actually, and we have to use the same ideas what we used before. Right, now, discussing about planned obsolescence, we see that they were already in the 60s, these cars. It says, so much that's new, so much that's great, so much that's Dodge. Of course, the American cars are not really an eco-design, typical eco-design products. But in the 60s, they were already selling things just because they were new. They were great, they were big. They were shinier than last year's. Each year we have new types of cars coming out. Each 3 years they redesign the cars. Now, how substantial that design change is, of course, it's a question. Even in 5-10 years' time, how much these cars are getting any better. Computers are, of course, a typical example of trashing them in 2-3 years' time, and then some buying some new ones. Now, but there is some competing ideas now. Because behind this planned obsolescence, there are very important business interests. I can sell more if I can sell the same product each 2 or 3 years' time to the same customer. So how much are corporations interested in avoiding planned obsolescence? Here, this is an idea that we should have some modular systems which can survive for many, many years. Of course, a computer, a desktop computer, is kind of a modular system, right? And we still replace it every 5-6 years, even if in the first 2 years we just replace the some parts. Now, how long we can make this? Maybe with home entertainment we can do it, use the same stuff for 10 years, maybe. But I haven't seen them working yet. So that's a good question, whether this will be competing with planned obsolescence. All right, another interesting one is, this is a chart or a figure of a car and how many parts this car has. This is an old car, actually. So a much newer car would have even more parts, more safety equipment, more gadgets, anything starting from a GPS to electric and heated seats and whatever you can imagine. I think there are, I'm not sure about the right figure, but there are tens of kilometers of wires in one car. Okay, so that's not even on this chart. Now imagine that you want to recycle this car, okay, all the parts of the car. You take it to the junkyard, but you want to know what these parts are made of. Okay? Now the tires are quite easy to guess, and the metallic parts, yes, but we have plenty of plastic materials in the cars. So the question is, how can we recycle these plastic parts? Some of them are just very small. They are made from different types of plastics. So again, we go back to the first strategy that we should use similar materials and easy to recycle materials, but we should maybe also put a little sign in the plastic. Okay, this is this type of plastic or this type of material. So when you disassemble, then it's obvious how you can use it. These days, they even produce manuals for each car, how to disassemble the cars. How to do it and what to do with the materials. So this is designed for disassembly. There are all types of designs here. Now, design for reuse. This is not exactly the type of reuse we are thinking of. But still, we can produce products which can be reused. Sometimes you buy some stuff, like some grocery stuff, because you think that the box is nice, right? Did it happen to you, maybe? So I don't care much about the content, but the box looks nice, okay? So that's kind of designed for reuse. Now, are they selling you the box or the content? Okay? Or some of the bottles we buy sometimes, we say, okay, now I can use this for some more time. But we can design them purposefully to achieve such a... such an objective. And then, of course, we can design for recycling, which means that it's easy to take it apart. As I mentioned, we know what kind of materials they used in designing the product, and so on. Now, these are the strategies, but just having a look at, you know, what actual companies are doing, this chart shows LG and what LG says about eco-design. This big electronics manufacturing company. And they identify four key strategies. We had eight. They say, okay, we have four. And they look at energy and energy efficiency. This is quite obvious. Recycling, improve recyclability. Resource, reduce use of resources. And hazardous substances. This was the first one we mentioned. So try to avoid these things. And here they have a couple of ideas. Replace with halogen-free flame retardants, lower use of materials harmful to humans. Here, reduce power consumption, standby power. This is a big issue these days. How much electricity we use just for the standby operation of all our gadgets. And then here we also have climate change, greenhouse gases, use of renewable energy. This is all under the energy topic. Then you can... Again, what materials to use to be able to recycle? More organic materials, more natural materials are easier to recycle, of course. Improve degradability. Talking about plastic bags, now we can produce plastic bags which are degrading in a couple of months, which didn't do it. Like a few years ago, this was not the case. Reduce product weight and volume. For example, an interesting one for transportation. If the product is lighter, it's easier to transport, produces less harm to the environment. Use natural materials, and again, recyclable materials. So this is what LG says about eco-design. And just to give you another example, you know Trek. Trek is producing one of the biggest producers of bicycles. And of course, this eco-design raises questions. What is a product which is environmentally friendly by nature? And then we can improve the production and the life cycle by eco-design. And what about those products which are not very friendly to the environment in the first place? So let's hope that this will play. This is what their bicycle has to say.
The Belleville. Inspired by the upright riding French voyageurs, Belleville is a completely utilitarian dreamscape that's absolutely eco-smart. It features a recyclable steel frame that, as discussed earlier, naturally reduces vibrations for a smoother ride. The pedals, fenders, chain guard, racks, and one-piece stem and handlebar are made of steel. Its Bontrager H2 Eco tires are natural rubber, sourced from ISO 14001 producers, and the rubber is certified sustainable harvest. And it's finished with steel racks, front and back, to take a lot with you or bring things back from stores, restaurants, libraries, or wherever your commutes take you. Plus, generator lights, front and back, eliminate the need for wasteful batteries and help you keep riding safely into the night. To increase its overall usefulness, the dropouts are designed for both derailleur and single-speed drivetrains to accommodate a wider range of riders.
So, this bike looks like a bike from maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, right? The materials they use is steel. Much more steel. I mean, if you go out and buy a bicycle now, they would have much more plastic stuff on it, right? What they do is they replace plastic by steel. It's interesting. Maybe you can recycle it easier, right? The energy content, of course, of building it would be maybe different. Yes?
Is it expensive, this bicycle?
Good question. I don't know. We should check. I guess it's more expensive because you get rid of the plastic stuff, but you replace it with steel. Now, it's also heavier, I think. So you have to push it harder. But that's environmentally friendly anyway, so you don't need more gas for driving it. But it's an interesting one. It's a nice one. It's a question, would we buy it? But it looks nice, I think. It looks like a nice solution. So what are the tools we have we can use to do this eco-design thing? And this is not a very simple field. It can be also very technical. And one of these rather technical tools is life cycle assessment. And this chart already tells us the main story about life cycle assessment. It's about looking at all the life phases or life cycle phases of the product, starting from raw material extraction, the forest representing it here, material processing up here, parts manufacturing assembly. I will need it later on, but product use, we are looking at this, and end of life. So what life cycle analysis is trying to do is to gather information about all these phases of the life cycle. This is not very easy. Imagine if you are an assembly plant. You should know, taking that car example, you should know all about the 10,000 different parts of your car, where the raw materials came from and how did they produce that. So there are thousands of suppliers of big multinational companies. So how can you collect all that information? Maybe you're a big company, you can push your suppliers to provide you with some data, but still it's not an easy task, which means that very few companies actually undertake life cycle assessment, and mainly the big ones for this reason. It's also called cradle to grave or cradle to cradle analysis. Cradle meaning the birthplace of the product. Cradle to grave, that was the original version, you know, from birth to, you know, dying or landfilling or just dying product. But the cradle to cradle idea means that we should recycle and it would be reborn as a new product. There are some good and bad parts of this LCA. The good is that we can compare products and services. Actually, it's much better for comparing than just giving you a or giving us a general idea of a product. That's much easier too, because then we have to look at only a few life phases of the product. We can evaluate environmental and social factors, and then it can give you some ideas for design and production decisions. So this is the idea. It's a framework, very much technical field. You need a big database for this. And that's also the drawback, because we just don't have the data for most of the life cycle analysis we want to do. System boundaries are also a very interesting question. And what is the system I'm looking at? You can even cheat a little bit here. So if I'm looking at the system, like looking at maybe only my suppliers, but I'm not looking at the supplier's supplier. So where is this borderline, how deep I look into the product that can change the eco-design, or that can change the environmental information of the product, or the environmental performance, what I show. Now, that's a question also, how much companies are interested in disclosing information about their products. Do I want to have all this information available to the public? Some part of it may be yes, or how much of it I use it in my own decisions. So these are some drawbacks, and as a result, as I mentioned, many companies are not very active in life cycle assessment. This is how we should actually do it. Goal and scope definition. And this is very important, because as I said, the scope can influence the outcome. So if I'm producing one type of soft drink, would I include the packaging material or only the soft drink? Okay. This could be a scoping question. Inventory analysis is looking at all the potential environmental problems and then looking at their impacts. But then I have to interpret all this information. How can I change this? How can I influence this in my design phase? Here is an example of a bottle of milk, but only half of the life cycle, because it's already, we bought it in the shop already. Okay, so we are not looking at the production process. But then what we can do with it is take it home. Now, how do we take it home? That's also a question. How we package it? Type of the container, size of the container, thickness of the container material. These should all be taken into account when you make a life cycle analysis. Okay, you put it in the fridge, but how many times you open the fridge? Okay, what is my consumer behavior? Okay, how do I close the bottle? Okay, what type of cap I use? These are all influencing environmental information. Use in the home, I can, you know, clean it, collect it for reuse, or I can refill it at home. Should I clean my bottles before I put it into the selective waste bin? I'm using water. Do customers know this or not? So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, things depend on the consumer as well. So I have to know about my consumers to make a whole life cycle assessment. Then the kitchen bin ends up in the kitchen bin. Okay, how much space does it take and what's the smell? Some questions. Then, you know, some other bins, garbage truck, compaction, and then goes to landfilling or goes to recycling or goes to somewhere else, maybe incineration, possibly. I had a friend who did exactly the same thing. They tried to calculate the life cycle impacts of milk packaging. And halfway through, I asked him which is the best packaging material, because, of course, this is the answer we are looking for. Which is the best? Is it the glass or a plastic bottle or a paper packaging? And the only thing he could tell me is it depends. And basically depends on how far you are collecting back the recycled materials. So if it's more than 100 kilometers, then maybe it's not worse. Then you want to have a one-way system of packaging. If you can collect in Budapest, for example, because then it's a high-density population, or in the Netherlands, in Europe, in Western Europe, maybe it's a good idea to collect waste and recycle. In some other parts of the world where much less people live, then maybe we don't want to recycle. So LCA depends on those things very much. And very often it's about transportation. So transportation is a big chunk of the life cycle cost. All right. Just to look at another methodology or tool, we said we are looking at some tools now. This biomimicry, which has been around for some time, and Similarly to industrial ecology, which is trying to mimic nature, looking at loops of material flows, this biomimicry is trying to do the same thing. We are trying to imitate nature and steal the best ideas of nature. And I use that during the design process. And for example, here studying a leaf to invent a better solar cell could be an interesting solution. Now, whether we will get there, that's another question. So it's shortly, it's innovation inspired by nature, looking at how nature works. This is also a methodology for biomimicry. Finding some real challenge. That's an interesting one, right? What is a real challenge? Very often we feel like that the products and services we are provided are not really fulfilling any real challenges or needs. Okay? Interpreting, discovering, looking for natural models, how things work in nature. In construction, we could use some very good ideas. And they are starting to use some, looking at how natural structures are built up. We can use that in construction industry. This is also biomimicry. So looking at nature strategies and then try to evaluate whether we can use this and how we can use this. For example, materials. The spider web is very strong but very lightweight, very thin. If we can use something like that in construction or in any other field of life, that would be great. But we just don't know how the spider does it. Okay, we can't produce it in large quantities. So there is another idea. Now also policy can try to push companies into eco-design directions, into designing more environmental products and services. This is something we would all know. An energy certificate of, for example, could be a fridge, but this is a car, actually, a Peugeot 207, saying that, okay, this is the carbon emissions of the car, which puts it into the B category. It would be more a fridge or a household appliance. We would see these certificates. But there are some other tools as well. There is an energy efficiency policy that could be part or understood as part of the eco-design policy of the European Union. There's a directive on eco-design, which is trying to give ideas to different products and product lines and different types of, say, electric appliances, how to design them in a more sustainable way. And also the energy labeling directive, or it could be the eco-labeling scheme. That's also some kind of a tool to help eco-design. Now, these were the tools we had, starting with LCA and then looking at this biomimicry and policy tools. But let's look at some solutions. So some ideas, what could be used as by ourselves in everyday life. Now, some of them are a bit weird, so we haven't used them or we are not really thinking of using them. What would this thing be? It's a bit hard to see the picture, but basically this is a sink, a kitchen sink, which would double as a dishwasher. Okay, so you don't need an extra dishwasher in the kitchen, but you just use the sink and this kind of plastic cap. You can use it as a plate or something, a bowl. But if you turn it around, then the sink would work as a dishwasher. So you save materials, you save a special equipment, you save space in your kitchen. Now, I haven't seen this in operation, but designers are coming up with interesting ideas. Here's another one. It's a bit easier to understand, right, from the picture. Okay. Would you use this in your home? Okay, if you can buy it. But actually, this is nothing special. Just buy a washing machine, put it over the toilet, and then use the washing machine, the gray water of the sewage water coming from the washing machine to rinse the toilet. Now, of course, this is only for a beautiful picture. You don't have to put the washing machine over the toilet. You can put it anywhere. The point is that you want to use the washing machine or any type of wastewater in the household. The problem is right now, even if you look at the university or any apartments or houses, we have one single water system in the home. And we are using drinking quality water for any type of purpose. I would say 80-90% of this usage doesn't require drinking quality water. And this is the idea here. It's just to show that this would be possible. It just needs a little bit of fitting of this piping and plumbing, and this could work. Washing our cars. We don't need drinking water for car wash. Another one. Swimwear from eco-design textiles. There are fashion shows now which would promote this kind of fashion. This is again not something we obviously think of, but it could be done. This EcoPanda movement or website is trying to promote this. Now there are some other things which are less weird, and we even meet them every day. We just don't think of it. This is just saying, well, I'm not a virgin, talking about the paper. I'm 100% post-consumer waste. I'm not processed with any chlorine. I saved 1327 gallons of water, 55,000 BTUs of energy, and so on and so on. It's hard to read the end, okay? But the end is just by a designer choosing me. Okay? So if you are designing, say, a brochure or any kind of leaflet for a company or any kind of paper or printing materials, now talking about printing materials, some of the paper materials here are not recycled. But these are huge quantities. So this is also eco-design. You can say this is part of an eco-design program. This is a packaging which is designed for with ecological ideas in mind, made of cardboard box, using less different types of materials, selling cell phones in it. And it shows that it can still look nice. Here, this is a huge field in eco-design, and it's about our homes and apartments. How do we build office buildings? How this building has been designed? Was it designed with environmental issues in mind or not? These are all the parts of a house where you can actually do something about, starting from the roof, insulation, and all the parts, all the equipment. And this is an Energy Star house or home, which means this is a US EPA-funded project. We know this logo from where? Computer screens. When you start up your computer, this Energy Star logo comes up very often. But there are other products. It says it's talking about maybe cars, I'm not sure, but this, you know, there are a couple of other ideas where you can use this Energy Star program. It's a voluntary program for companies, it's not compulsory. All right, here. We love these before and after pictures, right? Now, what is the difference? It's not that the label went down, that's not the main difference. The main difference is that over the years, these bottles get thinner and thinner and lightweight, more lightweight than, say, 10, 20 years ago. We don't even recognize. Okay, but even if just saving like a few grams in one bottle, imagine the millions of bottles are saving how much plastic, for example. Now, the question is, what kind of water should we drink? That's also part of the picture. And where and when. Now, another issue with eco-design is that how much products we need at all. And here, the typical examples we usually have is this kind of bike sharing, for example, which is already working in some parts of Europe. They planned it in Budapest as well. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. It's an expensive investment up front. Also, this is a very hilly place. So in the Buddha Hills, they calculated that nobody would like to go up the hill, only come down. So they would need a pickup truck to transport all the bikes to the top of the hill so that in the morning people can bike down. That's an interesting problem. In the Netherlands, in other countries, they don't have this problem with more flat cities and towns. Usually these bikes are designed in a very strange, they look quite strange and quite different from usual bikes. And the main reason is, of course, that you find them first, but the second is that they don't steal them because they use special parts which you can't use anywhere else in a normal bike. The same problem may emerge with a car sharing system. Here, of course, you need to set up the whole system, including all the information, tracking of the cars, Maybe you want to book it on the spot or through the internet. You have to, install GPSs in the cars. The whole system is quite expensive to start up. I think BMW is starting up now a system like that in Germany, and there are a few working ones, but not very widespread yet. Of course, the question is, do we still want to have cars? Is this an environmentally friendly solution? Maybe better than owning our own cars, but maybe transportation, public transportation, is still a better choice for us. Here, this is a very simple idea, again. Something like going back to the roots. I remember my family, my parents, using a laundry service. We still use sometimes, yes? But many families, most of the families, have their own washing machines. Okay? Now, why do we need a washing machine? How much of the time we actually use it? Switch it on a few times a week? It's something very similar to most of our cars, which are sitting on the street 90% of the time, 95% of the time. The washing machine is the same thing. So the question is whether we want to take our laundry to a laundry service or buy our washing machine ourselves and buy millions of washing machines a year. Now it's a bit more maybe cumbersome to walk around, take your laundry and bring it back. That takes more time. But unfortunately, sustainability mean that we have to lose our comfort to some extent. So most of the solutions, or the more we wait, the solutions will be more uncomfortable. We'll have to do and go out our way to find some solutions to the problems. Good. So these are a couple of ideas of eco-design products. Do you have anything in mind? Apart from these things, any eco-design products you met before? Any buildings you've seen with eco-designed features? No?
Sometimes on buildings they plant wheat grasses on top of it.
Okay.
Such that the sun's reflection, this happens, I think I've seen this in India before, some very hot places. So that the building is cooled naturally by itself, and it's, I think that's very, very important in places which are affected by extremely hot summer weather and humid summer weather, like, let's say, Japan.
Right.
Well, around that height of the Ecuador area.
Interestingly, some Nordic countries have grass roofs. Maybe that's a tradition, but also some warm countries. Now, in construction, there is a lot of discussion about passive houses and passive buildings, meaning that they don't require any external energy source. It's hard to understand and how to believe that this is possible, but they say that in 20, 30, 50 years, our houses would be like that. So we will, at home, produce our own electricity with solar cells or windmills or heat pumps, for example, for the heating of the buildings. Right now, I think the housing sector is one of the biggest consumers of fossil fuels and emitting CO2 a lot. Now, these passive houses are very well insulated. Now, of course, the question is what type of insulation we use. Do we use plastic type of insulation or some more natural types? If you look around, even in Budapest, you see a lot of these housing estates are now insulated, windows replaced. But the windows we replace are usually plastic windows because they are cheaper. Now, are they sustainable or not? The plastic insulation, is it sustainable? What will happen with it in 20, 30, 40 years' time? Yes?
Regarding the sustainable buildings, I have heard that one chocolate company, I think it was Hershey, built a building in Italy by the motivation of Green Umbrella Organization. And this building is totally covered with glasses. So
Right. One of the telecommunications company built an office building a couple of years ago near Budapest, which uses heat pumps and has some special arrangements of glass windows and a heating system, which is self-sufficient. So they don't require any energy from outside the building, which is an interesting idea. Now, of course, some of these things are still very expensive. So even if you find some of these products, they would be very expensive, more expensive than usual products. That's the question, whether we will buy them, whether there will be people who are interested in buying them. Okay, just one more thing before we finish with this. Even when you go partying, you have to take care. Well, look at this.
So this is the sustainable dance floor, and it's going to generate electricity as people dance. Personally, I think this is one of the coolest features of Power Smart Village, and I think everyone should come out and bust a move and give it a try.
Well, the idea for the sustainable dance floor came out of one of the first brainstorms we did by thinking of making a dance club sustainable. And we wanted to use the energy of the people to power the club. The lights on the dance floor are powered by the energy of the people dancing on it. And what we would do with the dance floor is we translate the vertical movement internally by using a small generator into electricity. Well, people, when they step on the dance floor, they see an immediate reaction. So they know that if they give some energy, they get something back. And that's either something visual in the tiles themselves or something combined when they look at the energy meter. So people are challenged to get a reaction from the floor. So, and the more reaction they get, the wilder they get. The dance floor will be open to the public between February 10th and February 28th. And there will be a whole bunch of activities, competitions and demonstrations throughout the game. So come down, do a little dance and share your energy.
So I haven't seen one of them in Hungary yet, but when you go out partying tonight, that will be, you know, very important. Jump more and then we'll generate more energy. Okay, thank you very much for this part of the lecture.